We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right. It's a pleasure to have Pete Rose with us. The book, Play Hungry, The Making of a Baseball Player. Pete's going to have these tour dates here in the metropolitan area coming up tomorrow. He will be at Barnes & Noble on 5th. At 1 o'clock, he will be Books and Greetings in Northvale, New Jersey at 6 o'clock. That is tomorrow. We welcome Pete in. Let me give you the publisher, just so everyone knows. The book, Pete Rose, Play Hungry. Penguin Press is the publisher, The Making of a Baseball Player. Pete, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for joining me. A pleasure. You've been, you know, lately I haven't heard much from you. You always are someone who's going to get a lot of attention. But why another book? What motivated you to do another book?
Well, I'm 78. This could be my last book. And, you know, of all the things I did in my life, I never really took time to really thank my father for everything he did for me. And this is pretty much a love story between me and my father. And as you know or may not know, I grew up in the 40s and 50s. And I had a father who was a triple athlete, a baseball player, a basketball player.
Kind of a legendary athlete.
Yeah. And he took me from the time I was able to walk, and he taught me the correct way to play and to be aggressive and to be punctual and to be enthusiastic. And that's the way I played the game, and that's the way he played the game. So I guess what I'm saying in a roundabout way is I'm just Pete Rose in the next generation with a bigger and better opportunity. That's what it boils down to.
Well, you miss your father, which is clear.
Sure, everybody misses their father. But I hope you had a relationship with your father like I did.
I did not have a father. So my father left when I was 6, 7 years old, never saw him again.
And there's a lot.
I didn't grow up without a father. So yeah. I didn't have that. I had two brothers, no father. So I don't have that. But he's clearly a driving force and had a huge impact on you. It reminded me a lot of stuff I've heard Tiger Woods say about his dad. Okay. He still, you know, a lot of people felt he spun out of control because his dad wasn't there.
Yeah.
You mentioned that some of the stuff wouldn't have happened to you
probably,
if your dad
right.
was
probably
still
right
around to kind of tell you to knock it off. Okay. But interestingly, the fascination with you, Pete, and the people have, you're one of these rare guys, okay? You're still not in the Hall of Fame. If we called up and opened the phones right now, the people would vote 80 to 20 for you to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, maybe 90 to 10, okay? You've been incredibly popular. There's no question. You've always been popular with the fans because of the way you played, clearly.
Great. You're absolutely right.
Clearly. I mean, the fans, I can tell you by just doing a show all these years how the average fan reacts to you. You also play a game that's kind of a bygone game now. It's not this, you know, you mentioned that in the book. And I could tell you about this about Pete, which I could tell you. I've had guys tell me, and I won't say what players. I've had people tell me, big-time players. Number one, Mike Smith told me that you taught him how to win.
Yeah.
Number two, another player told me that you were the smartest baseball man he ever met. And that guy is in the Hall of Fame, too. He said you taught him everything. I won't say who it is. Taught him everything he knows about baseball. That you were the smartest, instinctive baseball guy he ever had as a manager. And he had, like, 10 managers. The only one he ever had that he ever learned anything from really was you. So you had a great gut instinct for the game. There's no question. I mean, you came in to say to me right now, the Yankees are playing well. And I said, you know who's made a big difference? LeMayo. You said, yeah, hits the ball right field. The other night again, Sale hit a home run to right field, hit a double to right field.
Yeah.
You're in Vegas. You know that he's hitting the ball to right field.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're still following the game today.
Well, you don't put no switch on him.
Yeah.
Don't put no switch on him,
but
or you're going to get beat.
You make the point about baseball's too much 3-run homer and then sit back and nothing happens for 5 innings.
And if you don't hit the 3-run homer, Mike, you strike out 3 times.
Right.
And
let's start there. Let's start with, before I get to you, how about baseball today? Baseball's struggling a little bit. It's not doing well.
You're absolutely right.
It's not doing well. A lot of people think it's not connecting. And the game is power hitting, power pitching, three-run homers, no hit the cutoff man. You made a point about something I used to watch as a kid. No one plays Pepper anymore. You know that, remember? You talked about how good you think it is to play Pepper.
Every day.
You know, it's funny.
No Pepper games behind home plate.
No Pepper games. And you said you played Pepper every day.
Every day.
That's amazing. And you watch those old baseball movies, what are they always doing?
Playing Pepper.
Playing Pepper. Everybody, Gas House Gang, the whole thing, everybody playing Pepper.
I mean,
do you
agree with this or disagree with it? If I walked into a clubhouse today, whether it was the Mets or the Cardinals or the Reds or whatever, and I start talking about hitting, and don't forget, I got almost 4,300 hits.
Right.
They would think I'm crazy. They say, what the hell is he talking about?
No exit velo, yeah, not lift the ball.
Not
back,
lift.
Tilt
who cares
shoulder,
how fast it comes
ball.
Off the bat?
Right.
I mean, I'll take a home run, but give me four singles and two of them with a man on second. That's what wins games too. And, you know, of all the records I got, Mike, and I got a lot of them, okay, the proudest record I have, and you'll understand this, is I played in 254 more winning games than anybody in the history of sports.
Your number is 1972. You had 1972 wins.
Yeah.
You're the winningest player of all time.
Yeah, by 254.
When I started the book, I came in the next day and told the fans that. I said, who's the winningest player, right? Remember when I asked you guys, who's the winningest player of all time? And they didn't guess it. And I said, it's Pete Rose. Pete Rose played in 1972 winning games.
And that don't include All-Star games or playoff or World Series.
1972 regular season
games.
Winning games. That's in it. Now, you played in a lot of games, more than anybody.
3,500.
Right. But you know exactly how many you won, and you're proud of how many games you won.
Because it's the most. And I tell people this all the time. You only play sports for one reason, and that's to win. I ask kids all the time when I'm signing autographs, 20 days a month, 4 hours a day. Did you win? No. Or why do you play? Well, it's fun. Is it fun when you lose? No. Then why do you play? You play to win. Everybody, if moms and dads are listening to you and I talk right now, and you have sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, grandsons, granddaughters that play sports, don't tell me if you go watch them play and they do something positive and win the game that you're not in a better mood on the way home. Because you are.
And why give a trophy to everybody?
What?
Which I've never
participation?
Been a, yeah, that's I've never been a fan of that. Never. Yeah,
but why would you?
Listen, we're dinosaurs.
Yeah, but we are.
That's exactly right. Because that's not allowed anymore. I get yelled at here by people who say, you know, what are you thinking about? Everybody, no. The idea is to teach someone that compete and win. That's the idea.
Well, it's the same thing as teaching if you take a test, do you want an A or a C?
That doesn't make any sense to me. Let's start at the beginning, though, because I always say this. I don't invite a lot of authors in unless I'm going to read the book. I read the entire book. The book is a great read, folks, because I learned things about Pete Rose that I never knew. Here's Pete Rose's dad. Takes you to the coach when you're a little kid and says, he will play every day. He will be at every practice. He will not miss a day, okay, but make sure he switch hits.
And hands 9 years old.
Hands him to the coach. But what I like is never will miss a practice. Now, if you go to games, kids miss games, practice. They have three different teams. They have camps. They have this. Never miss a game. Never miss a practice. You committed to your team. You didn't go on family vacation. Hey, you and I have one thing in common here, okay? Probably a lot of things in common, but here's the thing. How many vacations did you go on when you were a kid?
None.
I never went on one until I took my kids on a vacation. So a real family vacation.
Mike,
never went on a family vacation.
I got a fiance who I've been going with for 9 years, and 9 years ago, I have a buddy of mine just developed a golf resort in Cabo named Diamante. Ken Jotty's his name, and we decided to go down to Cabo because the two kids.
Right.
My two stepkids are golfers. One's a really good golfer, a 17-year-old. A 21-year-old is not playing golf anymore, but the 17-year-old's really, he's on the Toyota Tour Cup in California. And we went to Cabo, and it's the first time in my life I ever went somewhere when I wasn't working. I've been to Tokyo for 5 days, but I worked 2 days. I've been to Hawaii, been there 3 days, but I worked 2 days.
Right.
I've been to Puerto Rico. I've been to Dominican Republic. But I never went anywhere where I didn't have to sign an autograph, didn't have to work.
Or a tour, baseball tour.
And now we go a couple times a year.
Right.
And
but you never went.
I'm not disappointed at that.
But you never went as a kid.
Never.
You just stayed and played ball.
One time a year, Mike, we would get in a car and drive 2 hours down the river in Cincinnati.
Yep.
To Madison, Indiana, and watch the regatta, which is the hydroplanes.
You like that?
Well, that was the only thing.
Right.
And we go back home that night, so it wasn't really a vacation. And I remember the first time I signed a baseball contract in 1960, and I got on an airplane to fly to Syracuse, New York, to drive to Geneva, New York, to play for the Geneva Reds. And I'm looking out that window, and I'm saying to myself, how in the hell is this airplane staying in the sky? I had no idea. I was scared to death.
And you were, like, first of all, here's an amazing thing you say. You were not the best baseball fan. And Eddie Brinkman was the big star on your team.
He was.
Right? And
he was,
I,
like,
remember
Babe
Eddie
Ruth?
Brinkman, who was a light-hitting shortstop, good fielder.
Great fielder.
Great fielder, but not a good-hitting shortstop. Light-hitting shortstop. And he was the big star on your high school
Absolutely.
Team.
Absolutely. He was the pitcher.
You were the third best player, you said, on your team.
Yeah. And you remember when Ted Williams went on a fishing trip? And the guy traded Eddie Brinkman to Detroit, and Ted got mad
because he
thought he could help him become a good hitter because Eddie could, you know, he had a great arm.
He went crazy
and,
about that
he
trade.
He did. He did go crazy. You're absolutely right.
I remember that. Absolutely.
Eddie was my third baseman pitcher, and I was a catcher.
Eddie Brinkman was a very good fielder. He was a light hitter, though.
Was a light hitter.
Banjo hitter, but
But in high school, he was Babe Ruth.
But he was the big star, not you.
Yeah.
And you were never the big star on your teams growing up.
Right. I was a good player, but there was always a better player.
But you wanted, but you knew, and you were a much better football player. And
yeah,
you loved football when you were a kid.
I did love football.
You were a big football player. You were built like a football player, and you were a very good football player.
Yeah, I almost went to the University of Tennessee to play football. But I'm glad I didn't do that. But that was to make my dad proud, because my dad was probably the best football player ever to come out of Cincinnati. And he played back when we had no TV. The only TV we had was the Cleveland Browns. And he played Sunday football, and there'd be 10,000 every Sunday at the games. And I used to be the kid that would pass the hat at halftime to try to get the money to pay for the referees. But you always did it because there was 10,000 people.
Absolutely. You know, and then you
those are the good old days.
You get to Geneva, and who's on your team? A couple of names they know here in New York. Art Shamsky, right, is an early guy.
Shamsky was my roommate.
Art Shamsky and
Tony Perez. He was the second baseman.
Who becomes one of your key guys with the big red machine.
Well, Tony Perez
is
for you guys.
Guy.
Hey, yeah. Tony Perez, you guys listening.
One of the
Mike
great RBI men of all time.
He got about 1,700, but he's the only Cuban ever to make the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Did you know that?
Yes, one of the great. Yes, and probably, if you ask me, tell me great RBI men, I'd say, I think I can think of a couple, Miguel Cabrera, Manny Ramirez, and
Tony Perez,
one of the great RBI men of all time.
Now, he knocked in almost 1,700, hitting after Johnny Bench.
Yep.
Johnny didn't leave too many ducks on the pond.
No.
And when he was on first, it took a triple to score him.
But it's amazing that you ran into these guys. And, you know, you made a very good point about what those teams meant to you and what the scout you were connected to, what he meant to you, and how he pushed you along.
Yeah.
But also, when you finally get to the Reds, and, you know, Pete, I saw you in 63. My brother John, who's almost 7 years older than me, has probably listened to this now. He's retired, lives in Long Beach. He took me with his friends to the Polo Grounds. I went with my little league in 62. In 63, he took me, and they played a doubleheader against the Reds. Duke Snider was playing for the Mets.
Yeah. Casey Stengel, manager.
You were in the game.
Yeah.
And I saw you guys play a doubleheader. I saw you play in 63 at the Polo Grounds. So I was a kid. I was in the upper deck upstairs, and I saw you play that in that game. And it was a wild, like 13-11 game.
One game, a doubleheader we played at the Polo Grounds, and to check the records if you think I'm kidding you, I hit the first pitch of the game off of Jay Hook for a home run.
Right.
And Jim Maloney won his 20th game that day.
Wow.
And that was 63.
Yep.
And it didn't happen again until 2013 when a guy hit the first pitch of the game for a home run and the game ended up 1-0.
And so that first that
50
game,
years it took.
1-0 first pitch of the game.
First pitch of the game. Now, a lot of guys get a home run first time up, but not the first pitch, then the game ends up 1-0. That happened twice in the last, 2013, the last 56 years.
Tell me what. So you get to the Reds.
Yeah.
And there's Frank Robinson, Vada Pinson.
Jesse Gonder.
Frank Robinson, we know, just passes away. We know his impact. But I didn't realize the impact he had on you. He had a very big impact on you. Talk about what Frank Robinson meant to you.
The Reds won the pennant in 61. In 62, they went to spring training. They had a second baseman named Don Blasingame.
Yep.
He had 281 for him in 62. Now it's 63, and the Reds think they can get back to the World Series. And Fred Hutchison, our manager, sticks this young rookie from Cincinnati in the lineup named Pete Rose. And the Reds were a real cliquish team. Not bad guys. They were good guys. I'm talking about Gordy Coleman and Johnny Edwards and Gene Freeze and Eddie Casco, you know, and Joey Jay and Bob Perkey, all the guys like that. And they kind of resented me because they wanted Blasingame. And all of a sudden, Frank Robinson and Veda Pinson were the only ones that would go out to eat with me and socialize with me. And I was actually called in the Reds clubhouse, in the Reds office midway through the season, and I was told I'm hanging with the black players too much.
Really?
And I said, well, I don't really care what color my teammate's skin is. I'm hanging with Frank and Veda because they treat me like I'm one of the guys. And that was the end of that. And then Frank Robinson taught me, like my dad, how to be aggressive. He was one of the most aggressive base runners ever.
Great base runner.
And you don't knock him down because if you knock him down, the manager would fine you because you'd wake him up. And Veda Pinson was one of those guys like Marison Mantle.
Oh, he's fast too. He could run like the wind.
But he didn't get the notoriety because of Frank.
Yep.
Maris didn't get the notoriety because of Mickey.
No question.
Eddie Matthews didn't get the notoriety because of Henry.
No question.
And Veda was a great player.
Oh, he was. Great center fielder.
He bought me my first room service ever in Chicago because we were out and I came back. Remember Jim Coates?
Sure.
Well, I get home at 12:15, curfew is 12 o'clock, and he's got the chain on the door. And I was out with Veda. He says, well, Frank's back in Cincinnati getting an X-ray on his elbow. Come on down, stay in Frank's bed. So I went down, and he bought me room service next. And never forget it, Mike. It was $10.75. That was the first room service.
A whole new world.
Yeah, whole new world. Then I had to go down and get dressed, and we went to the ballpark.
You know, how about the impact of them trading Robinson when they did?
Well, that was after the 65 season. The Reds ownership thought he was old. Well, what did
he
do?
An old 30.
Yeah, well, he went and won the Triple Crown.
He sure did. Yeah. For Milt Pappas.
We got Milt Pappas, Dick Simpson, and Jack Balsham. That's who we got for Frank Robinson.
They thought he was a clubhouse lawyer, right? That's what they didn't like. He had too much to say. Is that was the idea?
No, you know, I think what happened to Frank, I think he got pulled over by a policeman one night in Cincinnati, and he had a gun in his glove compartment. They didn't arrest him or anything, but right. I think the Reds kind of didn't quite understand that in those days. And I think that has something to do with him getting rid of Frank. Frank ain't going to shoot nobody. Frank was, he was a tough dude, man. He played the game right. He taught me how to play hard. Not that I didn't know how to play hard, but when you talk about it and you watch a guy go out and do it, it makes an impression on you. And Frank did it. I mean, Frank went out there every night and busted his ass, played as hard as he possibly could, and he was a really good player. I mean, he had 39 home runs as a rookie.
Great player. I mean, nothing he couldn't do.
Nothing he couldn't do.
Absolutely. Great, as you said, great base runner. And ferocious. And when he went to the Orioles, you know, the Yankees were in their demise then. And I was a Yankee fan. I used to go to the games. Those Orioles killed the Yankees every time they played them.
And Brooks there, too.
Brooks and Paul Blair.
Remember
and
the series
Boog.
He had in 1970?
Oh, yeah, unbelievable.
Brooks against us?
Unbelievable. Well, as good as anybody. And Clemente the next year against the Orioles, the back-to-back series.
Yeah.
But I want to get to the 76 before we take a quick break. We're here with Pete Rose, the book. Play Hungry, The Making of a Baseball Player. Because here comes the Big Red Machine, and you get to the 70s. You win it in 75, and I know you guys love 75, and you talk about 75, and I know playing in Game 6 and 7 are so big for you. That meant so much, because they're two of the classic games of all time, you know?
Well, it's the first time I
Let's
won.
Let's stop there first, because then we'll get to 76, because 76 is personal, because I'll talk to you about it. Because I was in the stands for Games 3 and 4, so I want to talk about that, because you guys intimidated the Yankees off the field. So, but 75, when... Pick it up for where Carbo hits the home run in Game 6 and what went on after that. I mean, the Carbo home run is unbelievable.
Well, first of all, you know, Carbo was our first round draft choice ahead of Johnny Bench.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes.
In the same draft.
Yep.
And there's two guys I played against, Mike, that they carried their billfolds in their back pocket. I have no idea why. Rico Carty and Bernie Carbo.
Rico Carty, good hitter.
Yeah, I don't know why they carried their billfold in their back pocket. But, you know, Carbo had the worst swing in the world before the home run. he tipped it out of Bench's glove, and it was one of them half swings, next pitch straight away, and we go into clubhouse with Sparky. Big red machine, my ass. And I said, Sparky, did you see that celebration they just had? They won't be able to come back tomorrow. We got one more game to go. And we come back the next day, and we were down 3-0.
Down.
And until Bill Lee threw the Ephus pitch.
That Tony hits a mile.
A mile.
And then the little blue pit, which is the
But here's something I bet you don't even realize. You sound like you're up to speed on what's going on. I did.
Yep. Save the game.
Denny Doyle threw it in the dugout. Instead of the inning over, 3-0, 3-2, and momentum changed.
Save the game.
You're absolutely right.
Biggest
Most people don't even understand that.
I remember that. Save the game. The next thing, the two-run homer got him back in the ballgame. You broke up the double play.
Yeah, then we had the next year, we had to go to New York. And
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about this series. Before, let me start, okay? Forget you win the two games. You're up the two games, and the Yankees win the pennant, coast in the pennant with Billy by a million games. Beat Kansas City in the Classic Series with the shambles homer. Yeah. But they're a flawed team. They don't have a lot of power. They're not yet a great team. In 77-78, I always wanted them to play again because I think they could have played a heck of a series against you with Reggie and with the better bullpen. And
Reggie.
You know, they needed the power. And I didn't like Reggie, but they needed the power.
You didn't like Reggie?
I didn't like him as a Yankee. But, you know, listen, great clutch player. I just didn't like him as a Yankee. But forget that. 76, you win the first two games. You come back. You remember those three games? Games 3 and 4 were so cold. It was like 32 degrees.
It was ice cold, yeah.
But what I couldn't take for you guys, A, you ran on every outfielder like you didn't even care. You didn't even stop at first base against these guys, outfield arms, which were awful. And you psyched Mickey Rivers out of the building. You came walking up on him. Remember how close you walked up on him?
Well, Sparky told me.
You walked right up on him, and it was unbelievable.
Sparky said, I did film on this guy. And he can't hit a ground ball to left field. So take the bunt away from him. And you know something about that series? I don't know if you remember this or not. Griffey and I didn't do anything in that series. That was the first World Series where the DH was used.
Yeah, Dan Giesen killed killed the Yankees.
Well, three guys hit over. Bench was MVP.
Bench was huge.
Perez, Bench, and Giesen all hit over 500.
Bench had two homers in the game.
If me and Griffey had did something, we'd have wiped them out easier.
And you already won. You won in four games. What else you want to do? But you remember walking in on Mickey?
Oh, yeah.
You walked it like you were 30 feet away from him.
I was.
You were driving him crazy.
And he finally hit one right here.
Right at
and
you.
I snapped
and
I
just snapped it.
You remember that?
I was in the stands. I hated your team so much because you guys not only won, you rubbed the nose. And Munson was great in that series. Hit 500, that hit was, a million
that,
singles. And
that
then
was
he,
the
and then
only
ticked,
thing good about
Sparky
me playing in that World
Munson
Series.
Off, though,
Thurman
saying,
Munson was a great player, would have
video,
been a Hall of Famer.
And they had the talk where you were on the mound talking to Sparky saying, boy, can that Munson hit?
He could hit.
After the game, they asked him about Munson, and he said, don't ever compare anybody to Johnny Bench. And Munson was ticked. Munson was mad, but let's be honest. Thurman hit singles. Bench hit homers. You know, Thurman was great. Johnny Bench is the best catcher I ever saw. He was the best,
okay,
offensively and defensively.
Well, let me put a couple things at you, see if you agree or disagree. You know who the greatest hitting catcher in history of baseball is?
I mean, I think the best hitting catcher I've ever seen is Piazza.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Who's the best defensive catcher?
I think Bench is.
I think
Clay Dalrymple was really good.
Ivan Rodriguez.
You think he's even better than Bench?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
But the best overall catcher is Johnny Bench.
Right. I thought Bench was great defensively.
It's just like who's the greatest defensive third baseman? Brooks Robinson.
Yes.
Who's the greatest offensive third baseman? George Brett. Who's the best overall third baseman? Mike Schmidt.
Mike Schmidt both ways, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mike Schmidt's defense got really good.
It did.
It really got
good. You know,
when
I went to Philadelphia, and for the 79 season.
So you think Rodriguez is even better than Bench behind the plate, huh?
Yeah, just catching.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, you couldn't run on Rodriguez.
But
Bench is the
best. Bench was unbelievable.
Is the best.
Yeah, he was
but when I went to Philadelphia for the 79 season, Mike Schmidt was the best player in the league 3 or 4 days a week. After playing with me a year in 79, I had a great year, 330, a couple hundred hits, 100 runs scored, 40 doubles, whatever. Mike Schmidt became the best player in the league 7 days a week, just by watching me play.
He told me you taught him how to win.
I taught him that you don't hit that home run every day. Lead with your speed. Lead with your defense. Lead with your base running. Lead with your leadership. And he did. And that's why he's the greatest third baseman ever.
He was a great player. But he said that he didn't know how to win. That team didn't know how to win. He didn't know how to win until you got there.
Well, I figured this way. The problem with the Phillies in the 70s was the Reds, okay?
Right.
So if I leave the Reds and go to the Phillies, we don't have that problem no more.
No, it didn't.
And I went to the World Series in 80, I went to the playoffs in 81, and I went to the World Series in 83. So I played there 5 years and went to 3 playoffs and 2 World Series, which is a pretty good percentage.
But the 76 team's the best team you ever played on, right?
Probably.
I would say, right?
It was the same team as 75. The only difference was we added a DH.
Right.
But same exact team.
Right. But, you know, listen, 75, 76, same team together. But, I mean, what a collection of guys with Morgan, yeah. with obviously Bench and with,
you know something,
and
Mike, let me tell you
the
something.
The four of you at the top of the lineup are
And I tell people this all the time. I'm never going to get on your show or anybody else's show and say the Big Red Machine was the best team ever. But I'm going to get on your show and I'm going to tell you something that I would go to my grave saying. The Big Red Machine was the most entertaining team ever. We had Golden Glovers at catcher, first, second base, shortstop, center field. We had home run champions. We had RBI champions. We had batting champions. We had stolen base champions. And we had a flamboyant manager. It's got to be the most entertaining team ever.
And you had a lot of different kind of guys, too.
Yeah.
You know, you had yourself. You had Tony Perez.
We're the only team in the history of baseball. Only team in history of baseball to date. Now, I think it will happen someday with the Yankees. We had a white Hall of Famer, a Latino Hall of Famer, and a black Hall of Famer, and a Hall of Fame manager. That would be Bench, Morgan, and Perez. Now, someday, Jeter's going to make it. Rivera made it.
Right.
Torrey made it.
Right.
And Clemens should make it.
Eventually. Someday,
so that would be that scenario.
All right, take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the more current things with Pete right after this. All right, we're here with Pete Rose, the book Play Hungry, The Making of a Baseball Player, Penguin Press. Pete will be tomorrow at Barnes & Noble at 1, and he'll be at North Vale at Books and Greetings at 6. Pete, I've always wanted to ask you this, and I've had you in the studio a couple times. Going back to when the troubles started,
yeah,
was it animosity with Dowd, animosity with Giamatti, was that the big problem when you made the agreement, why it never just took and things got quiet after that? Why did that blow up right away?
The only thing I can think of, and if you remember, when Mr. Giamatti, who I got along with, by the way.
You did.
Okay. When he got up and he read the agreement, we weren't there. We were at another place. And he was at the New York press conference. And he read the agreement that there'll be no fining, he bet on baseball. Then he set the agreement down. And the first question someone asked him was, do you believe you bet on baseball? And he said, yes, I do. So everybody in the press got wrapped up in what he said and not what the agreement said. Does that make any sense?
Well, you felt, so you had an agreement that you weren't going to, he wasn't going to mention baseball. Was that the agreement?
Yeah, but the agreement was there'll be no fining, you bet on baseball, it's over. Then when someone asked him the question, and he voluntarily said, it's almost like this, Mike. You go in front of a judge, and the judge says, Mr. Francesa, you're not guilty, but I think you killed him. You kind of break the faith of the agreement. And then I had to live with that.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, the worst thing happened to both of us is 5 days later,
right?
He drops dead.
Right, which then everyone because blames you.
I seriously believe that he'd have given me an opportunity after a year. I really do believe that because, like I said, when Bart was president of the National League, I used to get along with him. You know, he'd periodically be on the road. I'd go up to his room, and we'd talk about different things to help the game of baseball become a better game. And he was very intelligent, very intelligent.
And he loved the game.
Sure he did.
Right.
He's president of Yale.
Right.
I mean, how smart you have to be.
Right, yeah.
And by the way, his son's a great actor, too.
Yeah, great actor.
Yeah. So that was the thing there. And John Dowd was just, he was a prosecutor.
Right.
And his job was, before he investigated me, was put mafia types behind bars. He runs Strike Force. So Giamatti got the right guy.
You know, listen, and I'm not trying to judge you in any way. We all know the mistake was not betting on baseball. The mistake was saying you didn't bet on baseball. Because if you just said you bet on baseball, everyone would have forgiven you.
Yeah.
They would have forgiven you.
Yeah, but here, a lot of people don't understand this. I'll try to explain it to you, okay? We're talking about 1989, okay? First of all, the lawyers told me not to admit I bet on it.
Right.
And secondly, I was scared. Why was I scared? I'm a man in my mid-40s. I got two young kids, and all of a sudden, they're going to take away the only thing I knew, being a baseball player, a manager. Okay, how am I going to support my family?
What did you think was going to happen right away? Did you think it was going to, you were going to get back? Like, did you think
after
you
a year?
You thought you'd get back in?
Yeah, okay. I thought that Bart would. I was clean up my act, which I did, and he would give me a second chance. But because he died, it didn't work out that way. God bless him.
Where is it now with the? Have you had any talks with the commissioner about anything?
A couple years ago, but
where is it now?
No, it's nowhere. It's nowhere because. I don't have a chance. I'll tell you why. And don't get me wrong. I'm over it.
Right.
Okay? I made the Reds Hall of Fame. I got my number retired. I got a statue.
How about you having a statue? See, here's the thing. It's baseball. Here's where baseball is completely hypocritical. How can you have a statue outside a building, but you're banned from baseball? You got a statue outside a baseball building.
Oh, cool.
And when they have a MasterCard deal and they want you on the field, you're on the field, which is not, yeah. You know, you should. Yeah. I hope I would have told them to take a walk. The bottom line is, though, it's like, wait a second. When I saw the statue outside the building, I said, how can he, if he's disgraced, how does he have a statue outside the building? That's nonsense. So, well, to me, that's why this should be rectified already.
In the last 5 years, okay, you talk about hypocritical. The Reds had me at the ballpark, bobblehead day. They sold 42,000. They had me at the ballpark to retirement number, 42,000. They had me at the ballpark when they put me in the Reds Hall of Fame, 42,000. They had me at the ballpark when they did the statue, 42,000. So when they can use me, and they did the same thing with Johnny Bench and Tony Perez and Joe Morgan. We're all used out now. We all got our numbers retired. We all got statues. We all got our jerseys retired.
Right.
And there's nothing else for us unless we have some kind of anniversary for the Big Red Machine.
See, here's the thing that I've always felt. Maybe I'm wrong. They think Pete has never been honest with us. Pete lives in Vegas. He probably still gambles, which is your business. But they probably figure... somebody'd want Pete back in baseball, and we don't want him back in baseball. Did you ever think about saying to them, I'll agree I'll never work in a uniform again, but clear me so that I can go into the Hall of Fame?
They're not going to do that. Now, let me ask you a question. Okay, now, you got to understand this. Okay, I'm 78 years old. I work my ass off, you know, 20 days a month. Okay? What is the big deal if I want to go bet tomorrow night on a basketball game legally and go home and watch it on TV?
Nothing.
That's my enjoyment.
Nothing.
That's
nothing.
My enjoyment
Their fear
now,
is, I
tell
think their
me.
Fear is that you're still popular and they don't want you inside the game if you're betting because I think because of your background.
Well, I'm not going to be inside the game. You're not going to hire me.
They think somebody would hire you, I think.
At 78 years old?
What? You know what? Make you a coach. Put you in an
organization.
No,
I don't want to be a coach. I don't want to be a coach. I wouldn't want to be.
Or maybe be thinking somebody thinks you'd fill their building as a manager. You know, people are crazy.
Well...
you're a popular figure. Hey, you still sign autographs every day because people care about you.
You have to understand that if people don't understand I learned my lesson, they're never going to understand.
Well, I don't
what
know.
Do you think?
Go ahead.
What do you think about the new thing going on with baseball?
Baseball's in the gambling business now.
Okay. Because they have to send the starting lineup to the commissioner's office 15 minutes for every game. And what does he do with it? He sends it to the MGM Grant.
That's right.
Now, isn't that a little hypocritical? And I understand. I understand baseball making money.
Wait a second. They're in the gambling business now. All the leagues are in the gambling business.
I know they are.
So let's forget the nonsense. They're all in the gambling business. They don't trust you because they can't control you. They think you, they know you bet on baseball. Now, listen, they tried to say, and I'm sure they looked under every nook and cranny to see if you bet against your team, which is an offense, but you would never do that.
No.
See, I said I know Pete bet on, I know he bet on baseball because I know he's a big gambler. And I know he knew when he had an edge, so he bet on baseball. But I said, I would bet my life you never bet against your team.
No, I wouldn't even think about doing that.
No, because you want to win every game. I understand
that. That's what a manager should do.
Right. I understand that. I completely understand that. So I never thought that was the case. But but I think they're afraid of your popularity, and they're afraid that you're still going to gamble if they let you get back in the game.
Let me tell you something, Mike. I believe this. Really, I really believe this. You may not, or listeners may not.
What's that?
I think I'm the best ambassador baseball has. I work 20 days a month, 4.5 hours a day, signing autographs for kids and fathers and grandmas and grandpas, and all I do is talk positive about the game. Name me somebody else that's a former player that does that much road work for baseball.
I don't think there probably is.
There isn't.
Listen, this should have been rectified. This is one of the great car wrecks of all time. First of all, you got bad advice.
Yeah.
Secondly, there was animosity.
Good thing I had my seatbelt on.
From Faye Vincent. There was animosity from Faye Vincent.
Yeah, he thought I killed Giamatti.
Because his buddy died. Absolutely. Yeah. Anytime I talked to Faye about that when he was commissioned, you could see his face would get red. Okay. Yeah. He blamed you for Giamatti's death. He did. He thinks you had something to do. He thinks the stress you gave him caused Giamatti to die.
Yeah, the 80 pounds overweight or six packs of cigarettes a day didn't have nothing to do with it.
We know you didn't do it. I'm just saying. But
well, Howard Cosell said that, too.
But then you had the guys in the Hall of Fame who were mad at you, like the Fellers and the guys like that. Yeah. And listen, you should have been up front. And listen, I'm not saying I would have done better, or you were under a lot of pressure. And you didn't want to admit you bet on baseball. I understand that. You were trying to protect something. So, but if you had done that, I think it probably would have been over a long time ago.
You're probably right. But we can't change it, Mike.
No, I know. So now I'm looking for a way to go in as a guy who's still breathing. Don't you want to have that day? You deserve that day.
Well,
and your fans deserve that day.
I know that.
Can't you come to some agreement with the commissioner you will stay clear of the game?
If the commissioner told me tomorrow, I'll put you on the list if you never make another gambling bet, I'd say my hands are – put the handcuffs on me.
I don't think he'd trust you. That's the thing. I think he thinks you'd gamble.
I can't.
But the thing is, how about if you don't even have to go that far? How about that you would sign something that you would never go back at as an active participant in the sport at this age? You're not going to go back in the sport, right?
No, I'm a fan.
That's what I mean.
Nothing more than a
fan. I would think that would be enough to let you go in the Hall of Fame.
What about just let me be on the ballot?
Oh, you'd be voted in the first year.
I've never been on the ballot.
No, you're not allowed to be on the ballot because we know
they changed. Faye Vincent changed that rule with the Hall of Fame.
Because
when I got suspended, a suspended player could be on the ballot, but they took it off because of me.
I'm telling you right now, Pete. I'll tell you this: if you would go to the commissioner and say, "I will sign this that I'll never do anything else," but also have your guys start a fan thing where they sign signatures, I bet you could get 1 million baseball signatures of fans who would deliver them to the commissioner to have you go into the Hall of Fame.
Mike, you're a smart guy, okay?
There's nothing...
Don't you understand that baseball don't give a damn about what the fans think? And if you watch them over the last 20 years, you're going to tell me that they worry about what the fans think?
They know what's good for business and
what's not good for... That's why you got a show, because you can constantly talk about the bad decisions that baseball make,
absolutely,
the bad rule changes that they have.
Absolutely. That's all true. But
so what makes you think a letter from me to the commissioner is going to change his mind?
Because I think there's something good that could come out of this.
Well,
you know what? Here's the biggest joke in the world. When people say to me, isn't it awful that Pete Rose is in the Hall? And I said, well, listen, first of all, Pete's on that list, and you can't get into the Hall of Fame unless you're off that list.
Yeah.
So, but number two, I said, Pete Rose is already in the Hall of Fame. Aren't his bats there?
Yeah.
How much memorabilia yours is in the Hall of
15
Fame?
15 items.
15 items. Isn't your history... aren't your records in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
So you're already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I just don't have a plaque.
You just don't have a plaque.
I'm allowed to Cooperstown to go there, but I'm not allowed to hang.
And listen, you've ticked them off when you go. You've ticked them off when you're going to Cooperstown because you go there and draw these huge crowds and sign autographs.
I get the biggest crowd of anybody,
right? And they don't like that.
Why does that piss them off?
Well, it does because they think you're flaunting.
You're baseball flaunting it at them.
You know,
after 30 years.
Hey, listen. I have no... See, some guys would come in and they'd say I'm still popular, and I'd be thinking, boy, is this guy lost. I know how popular you really still are with the fans. The fans, they remember this guy. This is the guy they remember. The guy with his hair slicked back, diving into a base. You know? Let's touch on Fosse for a second, because that's the other big controversy of your life. You went out to dinner with Fosse.
I don't know what the controversy is.
Well, people felt Pete Rose should have, you know, in an all-star game, and I disagree, should have gone around him or should have done something. But it was an all-star game, and you and Fosse had gone to dinner just a couple of nights before, right?
One night before.
Talk about the play.
Okay. First of all, I had a friend of mine, still is, named Sam McDowell.
Sudden Sam.
Yeah, played for Cleveland.
One of the fastest pitchers I ever saw.
Yeah, he was. And about a week before the All-Star game, they added Ray to the roster.
Right.
And I already had dinner arrangements. The game was in Cincinnati with Sutton. And he said, can Ray go with us? Sure. And he asked me every question about Johnny Bench. Now, if we were playing today, okay, if we were playing today, no one would have said a thing because Ray was breaking the rules. He blocked the plate without the ball.
Right.
Which you're not allowed to do. Right?
Yes.
So he was in a bad situation because he didn't have the ball. Okay? I hit him right before the ball got there. And if you look at the film, I bend over and ask him, was he okay? Now, the reality of the situation is I missed the next three games. He didn't miss any. And he went on to play nine more years, but yet I ruined his career. I tell people, if I hadn't run into Ray Fosse in the All-Star game, you wouldn't know who in the hell Ray Fosse is.
That happens to be pretty true.
I mean, so...
Does Ray Fosse have any animosity towards you?
He won't do a card show with me.
Oh, he won't? Okay.
No, no. Okay. And I know 4 years ago or so, he was at an All-Star game, and he was quoted as saying, he knows I was trying to hurt him.
Oh, come on. That's
if
ridiculous.
You look at the replay, Mike, I started to slide head first.
That's ridiculous. I mean, listen, I've seen worse hits on the catches.
I've had worse. The next year, I ran into Duke Sims.
I understand it may have affected it. He hurt his shoulder or something. Maybe, who knows, you're a big man, you're a strong man. But the bottom line is it was a typical baseball play. People who were objective to it said, oh, you can't do it in the All-Star game. Why not?
Why not?
Well, that's how the All-Star game was played in those
games.
There's
50,000 people, all Cincinnatians, at the game.
And people played.
Plus my dad.
And they played hard in those days in the All-Star game.
That's why we won 16 out of 17.
Yeah, I know. I hated that, too, watching the National League game. But you know why you did, too? I'll tell you why you did, too. Because the American League had Mantle and Williams and Kaline and no black and Latin players that they didn't sign any. And then they were dead for 20 years.
You're absolutely right.
After those guys got old, they were dead.
You know why we had all the black players?
I don't know why that originally happened, though.
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because we had eight AstroTurfs.
Yeah, but why did the teams in the American League, why were they so slow to sign those players?
Because they had no AstroTurfs. You didn't need no speed in the outfield.
Maybe that was it. I don't know the reason why. Or maybe there was some prejudice owners. Who knows? I mean, maybe they were.
Our expansion teams were a lot better than the American League expansion teams.
Well, yeah, you had so many. I mean, you guys had.
And that's another thing I disagree
with. You're second string in the old days in the National League. Yeah, Cesar Cedeno and Bonds.
Would this be a good rule change, okay, that the host team at the All-Star game has to be represented in the All-Star game? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But why does every team have to be represented if no one deserves to be on the All-Star game?
Well, that's
game.
Always been ridiculous. Well, first of all, the All-Star game is no good anymore anyway, because now everybody plays everybody, and everyone sees everybody all year. So the All-Star game
only affects a handful of teams
and
going to the World Series.
And the American National is not the same anymore. You play interleague, the whole thing. It's not the same anymore.
We never had interleague play when I played.
Oh, God. And you had different umpires and different offices, and now you don't have any of that anymore. Baseball's really one
league. Let me ask you
now.
A question. I'm going to check your brains on a baseball statistic.
Go ahead.
Think about this before you answer it.
Go ahead.
Don't you guys laugh at him in there either, okay?
Go ahead.
The American League was known as a high ball league. The National League is known as a low ball league. You remember that?
Yeah.
Why?
Because the American League was a league where they threw breaking balls. The American League, they threw fastballs.
Nope.
Oh, because they had a chest protector inside.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah,
you got it on second time.
Well, the American League guys
stood up.
Yeah, the chest
protector. The National League guys were on a knee.
Absolutely.
So they're going to see the high pitch or the low pitch.
National League.
He's pretty smart, this guy.
American League, you saw a lot of curveballs, a lot of breakables.
It was
National
a breakable league.
Fastball league.
Yeah, they pitch backwards in the American League.
Listen,
that means when you expect a fastball, you get a breaking ball.
When you played, the National League was better than the American League.
I think so.
I think it was.
The top teams were
Now, the Yankees
equal.
Were always
Yeah,
great.
The top teams were equal. But the lower teams weren't.
Did Whitey really give you the Charlie Hustle?
Whitey and Mickey talking in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, is that urban legend?
That's absolutely true.
Okay,
what about me trying to make an All-Star game all the years I was in the outfield when we had Mays, Aaron, and Clemente?
Yeah. And guys,
how are you going to make the All-Star game?
And Bonds and Cesar Cedeno and all those guys. I mean, they were unbelievable.
I remember one time Cesar Cedeno, me, and Willie Davis started in Milwaukee at the All-Star game. And Mays, Aaron, and Clemente were the backups. People in the stands are getting them jerks out of there and get the real guys
Here's
in.
Here's the amazing thing. You went and played four different positions and you were a star.
Five.
You were a star, though. Think about it, okay? And you went...
Don't ask me my favorite position, Mike. Played, that's awful personal.
You played 500 You played 500 games at four different positions.
Five.
Right? At five?
Yeah.
At first two, you played 500?
Yeah.
So you played five positions, okay, at five. Why, when they first asked you to move, why didn't you say, I'm Pete Rose, I'm not moving?
No. The first time they asked me to move, I didn't agree with the move because I just made the All-Star game at second base.
Right.
And they wanted to put me at third to make room for Tommy Helms, who right. was rookie
I
year in 66.
Sure. Yeah.
And I just think I didn't think I was going to help the team. So they moved me back to second and put Helms at third. And he made rookie of the year. But then when I went from second base to left field, okay, they put Tommy at second base. Then I went from left field to right field.
Yep.
Then I went from right field to center field. Then I went back to third base to give George Foster a chance to play.
Yep.
Then when I went to Philadelphia, I went to first base to give
Schmidt.
Me a chance to play
because
they had Mike Schmidt.
Absolutely. Amazing.
But I had to have a glove. You got too many players today don't even have gloves.
It's amazing. Now, which position was second your favorite?
First was. Yeah.
Why? Because you talked
to
everybody?
You didn't quite get that when I asked you. Don't ask me my favorite position.
I got
Hey, everybody in this room has a favorite position,
yes.
And I'm the only one who's going to say first base.
Yeah. Now,
first base.
Why?
It was. You're always
you're
involved.
You're in every play.
You're
in
always
every
involved.
Play. Yeah, you're in every
you're
play.
You're holding runners on. You're the cutoff man, bunt coverage. You know, it was close to the dugout as opposed to left field. Left field was three furlongs away.
Let me ask you a couple of questions here now. You ready? Before you go. This has been great. Pete Rose, play hungry. I'll tell you where he's going to be tomorrow. He's going to be at Barnes & Noble at 1. He'll be at Northvale, New Jersey at 6. All right, couple things. Did you ever bet on baseball when you were a player?
No.
Okay.
Some people say I didn't, but to be honest with you, Mike, I do not remember betting as a player.
You did not.
I was playing in '86.
Okay, you don't remember, but you don't remember. You didn't bet as a
no.
player. Okay.
If I had to swear on a Bible, I would swear on a Bible.
Okay. The toughest. If you had one out to get, if you had a pitcher that you were in a box that you didn't want to face in a big spot, who was the pitcher?
Koufax. I couldn't hit him with this table.
No one else could either.
I was 10 for 57 off
no
him.
No one else
That's
could
175.
Either. He's the best pitcher.
But I'll tell you
of
another guy.
Time. Go ahead.
That I hit 340 off of, but I think was one of the best pitchers I ever faced, Juan Marichal.
He was great.
And you don't want to face Bob Gibson. You don't want to face Tom Seaver.
Right.
You don't want to face
But Sandy
Carl.
Was different.
Sandy was, oh man, he had a curveball. You know, Sandy
Did he
Koufax,
get you out with the curve or the fastball?
Both.
Both?
Both. He can wind up not throwing you a swing. Sandy Koufax went to the University of Cincinnati on a basketball scholarship.
Yep.
And when he was at the University of Cincinnati, he couldn't throw a ball inside the cage.
I know, remember.
But then when he got that control.
He was the best ever.
I'm not going to disagree
with
that.
When I was a kid, if you were at the game, and you know how they put the pitcher's numbers up on the scoreboard? If there was a score against Koufax, the stadium, it's an out-of-town game. The fans would roar.
Yeah,
Nobody hit him.
He was unbelievable.
Who's the guy you're in the field you didn't want to see come up in a tough spot where the game was on a line or the run is on base? Who's the hitter on the other team you didn't want to see come up in a big spot? What guy?
A couple of them.
Give me a couple. Hey, what?
Clemente.
Clemente?
Musial.
Even Musial. Musial.
Mays. Aaron. That's it.
Those guys.
Babe Ruth.
Well, you didn't see Babe Ruth play.
I wish I would have.
Yeah,
he's
so
the greatest.
I.
He's the greatest player ever.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Hands down. Who's the best teammate you ever had?
Well, I've been knowing Tony Perez for 59 years. When I signed to go to Geneva, New York, he was 2 months out of Cuba, and I was 2 days out of high school. He was the second baseman on that team. They moved him to third and put me at second. I went to dinner with him 2 weeks ago in Cincinnati. I sat there for 2 hours and have no idea what he said. He still can't speak English. After 59 freaking years.
Why was Sparky Anderson such a good manager?
Sparky Anderson, Mike, was the most street smart guy I've ever been around. He understood people. And managing a baseball team, coaching a football or basketball team is all about understanding people. Sparky was the best at it. I love Sparky Anderson. He was like a father to me. I was the only player ever to go to his house in Thousand Oaks, California. Marty Brenneman went, but I was the only player. I went and saw Sparky 2 weeks before he died. Remember Wade Hoyt?
Yeah, sure.
I went to see him, and I was the last person to see him. He died 2 weeks after I left the hospital, or 2 days after I, excuse me, 2 hours after I left the hospital. He was our announcer when I broke in. That's why I know so much about.
And you used to talk to him about all the old stuff.
Babe Ruth, and Ty Cobb.
Yeah, I remember.
I know
that
more
in the book.
Babe Ruth stories than anybody
you
in
wrote,
the world.
You wrote that in the book. Now I'm not going to get to. You went on a tour with DiMaggio.
I won't talk about it. Don't.
Listen. Well, you know the old saying.
He was the best,
when
by the way.
Marilyn Monroe was asked about Sinatra, she said he's no DiMaggio,
oh, yeah.
And you can explain why.
Yeah.
Because you gave Joe DiMaggio a shower.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Tell people how you gave Joe DiMaggio a shower.
Well, no, we're. Can I do the whole story?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we're down in, as you may not know, South Vietnam is a jungle.
He went to Vietnam with Joe DiMaggio on a tour.
Yeah, 23 days I lived with Joe. Right. And it's so hot you can't sleep, and all of a sudden Joe says, I got to take a shower. I said, Joe, we're not downtown Saigon. We're in the damn middle of the jungle. He said, I don't give a darn. I'm Joe DiMaggio. I got to take a shower. So the only way you could take a shower there is a guy had to get up on a chair, me, have a bucket of water, pour it into this canvas
pull it
thing,
over his head.
Pull the chain, and the guy underneath took a shower. I gave Joe DiMaggio a shower. Now, the best way to describe Joe DiMaggio is he was a penis with a man hanging from it. You're going to get us kicked off the air, Mike. You know how we call them thongs today?
I understand. He's
and
well
when
endowed.
I played, they called them shar shoes.
I understand.
Joe wore three of them.
I understand. Okay. So yes.
Let me tell you something. That guy was the greatest, man. He was so nice and so humble to those soldiers over there. It was absolutely
he's
amazing.
He's regal, kind of regal, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
he walked like a king. He thought he was a king too, but he walked like he was a king. Right?
I'll tell you one thing that now you can ask me why on the second one, but I've been around two people that walked into a room and the room lit up. One was Joe.
Who was the other one?
Bill Parcells.
Really?
When I walked into a private room at Gulfstream Racetrack. Yeah. He had a nice coat on. The room just beamed when he walked in. This is when he was coaching the Giants.
Yes.
And, you know, I met seven presidents.
He and I are very close, as you know, so very close. Yes.
Bill Parcells is the man.
Yeah, he's got
you
a,
asked
him
about that
presence.
Time at the Gulfstream when he walked
I
in
will.
There.
He,
yeah, he didn't know it, but he lit up the damn room.
Well, that's nice. That's a,
that's pretty
that's
hard
a,
to do.
That's a high compliment.
That's pretty hard to do.
That's a and you know, putting him in now, a class
with now, if you walked
DiMaggio,
in a room, the lights would go off. When's the last time you had this much fun doing an interview?
Now, listen. You've been great today. Now, I got a couple more for you. Number one, will it break your heart if you don't go in the Hall of Fame?
No, I'm already over
honestly,
it.
Honestly.
I'm already over it.
Is your family over it?
Yeah.
Everyone's over
my
it?
My family knows what kind of player I was.
Right, but does it
my
mean...
My fans know what kind of player I was.
Does it mean something to
sure,
you?
Sure, it would mean a lot to you. I mean, that his or her sport, everybody should want to go to the Hall of Fame. All my buddies are up there. You know, half of them are up there because of me. I think I helped Mike Schmidt get to the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
I think I helped Johnny Bench get there. I think I helped Joe Morgan get there. I know I helped Tony Perez get there. I think I helped Gary Carter get there. I hope Raines and Dawson. They were all my teammates. Why are all the guys that I played with in the Hall of Fame?
Explain why it would have been completely different if your father had been with you.
Because he was a no-nonsense guy. And but there again... if my father, I don't know how my father would have found out because no one knew.
Would you have listened to your father?
Sure, I listened to my father.
When you had to sit in a room and listen to people, would it have been better if your father had been in the room?
Yeah. My father was the only person in the world I ever idolized.
So you would have listened to him?
Sure, I would have. He'd have kicked my ass if I hadn't. He was a champion boxer, too. But it didn't happen, so we can't sit here and complain about it because it didn't happen.
You had an all-time career. You know.
I did pretty good.
No, yeah. No, listen, you had an incredible career. I don't buy that you weren't talented. That's nonsense. Okay.
I had
first
great
of all, you got
coordination.
You had great hands, and you're strong as an ox. So, I mean, nobody could stand in that box and turn on a ball like you did and not have talent. You had a tremendous
amount. Let me tell you something.
You had talent. It wasn't all just will. You had talent.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Let me ask you, does this make any sense to you? And I get tired of people patting me on the back the way I played.
Right.
Okay? Because, Mike, I think you'll agree, I played the way everybody should play.
I agree, but very few do.
I mean, does that make it right?
Very few did. I mean,
everybody passed me on the back. Charlie Hustle, you played hard. You played every day. Well, and everybody's supposed to play hard and play every day?
No, you did a things only a couple of guys did. You never gave up in a bat. Like your fourth at bat, you never gave up in a bat. No. Even if the game was 15-2, right? You never gave up in a bat, right?
I tell people today, kids, I said, I'm going to give you three bits of advice. The first bit of advice is to be aggressive. The second bit of advice is to be more aggressive. And the third bit of advice, never be satisfied. That's what you're talking about.
So when you're coming up,
that's why I got the record for 2-hit games, 3-hit games, 4-hit games, and 5-hit games.
When you came up in a game that was a blowout and there's no one left in the ballpark and everyone wants to go home, you weren't going to give up that at bat.
I want to get a hit, especially if I'm having a good night.
Well, you know what? That's not everybody's like that. You know
I got 4 hits in a game 73 times. I got 5 hits in a game 10 times. I got 2 or more hits in a game 1,250 times. They're all records.
You got 2 or more hits in a game 1,200 times.
Multi-hit games.
That's outrageous. It really is outrageous.
I made 9,800 outs.
What are you most proud of about baseball? What's the proudest thing you are about baseball? Is it 1972 wins?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the biggest disappointment of your baseball career?
I'm betting on baseball.
The
stupid.
Exile.
I was
exile.
Stupid.
The exile.
Yeah.
I actually think not owning up to it was worse than betting on it. I think they would have forgiven you.
You're probably right, but I can't.
I understand.
I don't have a crystal ball.
How many years did you bet on baseball? Like full time?
87, 88.
Just 2 years?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Were you a better
my team.
No, I understand. Were you a guy who bet every day? Were you a guy?
Better my team every night.
Were you a better every day?
On my team.
Were you, like, you? How many years? Have you been a better for 30 years, 40 years? How long have you been a gambler every day?
Well, I'm not a gambler every day now.
You're not. Okay. But were you a...
Well, I guess this is a gamble being here on this show.
Are you a player? Were you a gambler your whole life? Were you a guy waging on horses
let me tell you something. Let me give you one more story, and I got to get out of here because I'm tired of you.
Okay.
No, just kidding. I was 10 or 11 years old, and Don Zimmer was older than me.
Right.
Okay. When Don was alive, I used to tell people he's the only guy in the world who knows more about baseball than me. And that was very unusual because we grew up on the same Little League fields, same American Legion fields, same high school fields. Our dads were Little League teammates. And his dad and my dad used to take me and Don to the racetrack every Saturday. I'm just a kid. That's where all that shit started.
And okay? Don loved the horses.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah.
So... And Dud was his name. Don's dad was the biggest gambler in the world, but the nicest guy, okay? And he told me one time, I'm just 11 or 12 years old, he said, Petey, he said, I had a dream last night about white hats and black hats and round hats and square hats. I went to work, he owned a produce company. One of his employees gave him a new Cincinnati red hat. And as he did every day, he went up to River Downs Racetrack, he opened up the program, and number one is top hat. Now he's dreaming about hats, a guy gives him a new hat, number one is top hat. This is 1951, okay? He bets $1,000 on top hat, which is a big-ass bet in 1951. Mike knows. They're going around two turns. They're coming down the home stretch. The last jump, a 50-to-1 shot beats top hat. And I said, Dud, who won the race? He said, Sombrero.
That's a good story.
But he's a bad gambler because he told me one time he bet on a duck and it drowned. So that's a bad gambler.
Listen, so Pete will be at Barnes & Noble at 1 tomorrow, and he'll be at Books and Greetings at 6 o'clock in Northvale before he leaves New York. The book, Penguin Press. Pete Rose, Play Hungry, appreciate you coming in.
Oh,
Pete,
thank
pleasure.
You, man.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank
All right,
you.
Man. Take
Good
care
to see
yourself.
You. Pete Rose, back after this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.